Alaskans, we're still dealing with a pandemic. Longer nights and seasonal affective disorder don't make it any easier. We encourage you to take care of both your mental and physical health this winter. Get outside. Enjoy traditional foods. Connect with your community. And keep your body moving. Let's take care of ourselves and each other.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa Yakudi London. COVID-19 continues to claim lives as we head toward the pandemic's two-year mark, and the first cases of Omicron variant are showing up in Native nations. Some tribes are instituting a new round of strict measures to protect their citizens. Coming up, we'll have national tribal health experts on with the latest updates, and we'll take your questions. We are back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonia Gonzalez. An investigation that included undercover purchases led to federal charges against two Washington State men for allegedly falsely representing themselves as Native artists. The Justice Department says the two men had work in two galleries in Seattle's Pike Place Market. Biographies of the artists claimed they were Native American. Other references to items sold online also claimed to be from a Native artist. Jerry Van Dyke represented himself as Nez Perce, but is not an enrolled member. Louis Anthony Rath falsely claimed to be a member of the San Carlos Apache tribe. Undercover agents purchased works by the men from the galleries. A search warrant served at the home of one of the men revealed he also had feathers from eagles, owls, hawks, and other federally protected birds. The owners of the galleries have not been charged. The Ho-Chunk Nation Supreme Court ruled against the tribal president in a dispute over an emergency budget passed last year. The Green Bay Press-Gazette reports the court decided the tribal legislature acted properly in approving the budget in response to the pandemic that included cuts to the president's office. President Marlon White Eagle filed a lawsuit in tribal court claiming the legislative branch had no authority to make budget decisions that affected his office. Legislative officials argued the emergency budget avoided what would have been much more devastating economic consequences. President Joe Biden nominated Navajo citizen Sunshine Suzanne Sykes to the U.S. District Court for the Central District of California. She is currently a Superior Court judge for Riverside County, the first Native American to hold that seat. Her previous work includes time with California Indian Legal Services. The White House notes, if confirmed, she would be the first Article III judge in California and the first from the Navajo Nation. High schools across the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation are benefiting from the influx of 900 new musical instruments. The donation is part of the Tunes for Tots program by the rock band Widespread Panic. Richard Tubols reports.
The nonprofit organization Conscious Alliance brought the most recent delivery to Pine Ridge High School. Music teacher Ann Chesley says she's been keeping the school's music department alive any way she could.
A lot of the instruments that we have, I've put together. I've bought at garage sales and pawn shops. Big Borrow and Steal, everywhere we could get them. And these are new. These are specifically what we want, what we ask for.
Conscious Alliance collaborates with musicians to raise food awareness and is committed to youth empowerment initiatives. Natalie Han is the organization's Pine Ridge Field Director.
Our belief at Conscious Alliance is music is medicine, you know, and we have so many gifted and talented young Lakotas that just need the resources in order to, you know, express themselves and share their talent.
The donation not only supports the high school music programs, but also the Rock the Res music program and the Pine Ridge Flute Society. Will Peters directs the society.
A lot of these Flute Society members have graduated, they've gone on. But since they started, the recognition from our own people comes from when they're asked to come to play at a wake or a funeral or at a wedding or at a Sundance to offer a spiritual uplifting.
Red Cloud, Crazy Horse, and Little Wound High Schools are also receiving instruments.
In Pine Ridge, I'm Richard Tubels.
The Cherokee Nation unveiled plans for a new $400 million healthcare facility. Principal Chief Chuck Hoskins signed the legislation to replace the 40-year-old hospital in Tahlequah. The original hospital was designed for about 60,000 patients per year. The paper reports the actual number of patients in recent years is close to 10 times that. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
There are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States, and you may choose which booster shot you receive. More info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Melissa London. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued guidelines specifically for the holiday again this year. They include getting vaccinated, wearing masks, social distancing, and avoiding large crowds. Even with all the warnings and media coverage, the United States is seeing an average of more than 120,000 new COVID-19 cases a day. Health experts remain concerned about the Omicron variant, the low number of adults receiving booster shots, and how holiday gatherings might spike new infections. In this hour, we'll get updates about the virus, its variants, and vaccines with a couple of medical experts. And you can join the conversation too. How are tribal leaders in your area keeping the community safe? Are you social distancing this holiday season? Give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now on the show with us today, joining us from Phoenix, Arizona, is Dr. Loretta Christensen. She's the Chief Medical Officer for the Indian Health Service, and she's Navajo. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Dr. Christensen.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here with you.
Thank you. So give us an update on what is taking place in this phase of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, the path continues with doing all the right things, and I'm going to give tribal communities a big shout out in that they have been so progressive and proactive in their public health measures that I know this has really, really, truly saved lives. We continue to encourage vaccination. It is our best weapon and tool against COVID, no matter what the variant is. And of course, now we're encouraging the booster vaccines to give us that extra immunity to continue to fight against COVID-19. So while we're dealing with still the remnants of a great deal of Delta variant, and now Omicron is now coming in as well, unfortunately slightly increasing each day, the message is very much the same. Wear your mask, watch your distance, and wash your hands. Please, if you haven't been vaccinated, get out and get vaccinated. If you have been, please get out and get your booster vaccines, and that includes our 16 and 17-year-olds, which we're very happy about, and we continue to push also vaccinating our 5 through 11-year-olds. So we have to just continue this fight and keep our people safe. Thank you.
Can you tell us more about the Omicron variant, why it's different, what we should be worried about?
Sure. The Omicron variant is a very mutated variant, where Delta had very specific mutations that we realized made it very transmissible and severe in its disease. The Omicron seems to have a little bit milder disease. We're not sure about transmissibility yet, but it has 60 mutations already that we're aware of, half of which are on the spike protein, which is what allows that transmission. So that is what has been concerning about this variant. But bottom line, whether it's Delta or Omicron, we have to do the same things. Our vaccines still work. We still have to do our public health measures. And we know that our monoclonal antibody therapies, we have to continue to encourage use of those very early when symptoms appear to our high-risk patients, because we know we can head off severe illness, hospitalizations, and, of course, death. So it is certainly worrisome, again, that we keep seeing new variants come out, but our approach has to be very strong and the same. We have to be very, very careful and provide all the protection we can for ourselves and our families, which is the same with all of COVID-19, and we have to be very vigilant.
Yes, being vigilant, wearing our masks. But why is it so worrisome that there are more mutations with Omicron variant compared to the Delta variant?
Well, because when we develop medical therapies or the vaccines that we use, we have to always be concerned, are we able to cover all of the mutations that occur with these variants? And we know from our studies that so far everything is working with the new variant, but it's not widely spread yet. So we have to see how that rolls out. A lot of work's being done, a lot of scientific research to test our existing vaccines against this variant to make sure they are still able to mitigate the virus. But when it has that many mutations, it does give us a bigger challenge to make sure we have a broad enough penetration of our drugs to keep us from getting COVID-19. So if it has one or two mutations, we test those one or two mutations. When it has 30 to 60, we have to do a much more broad research to make sure we're hitting everything adequately. So that's why it's been taking a little bit longer for us to get the research out to show that how effective our Pfizer, Moderna, and Janssen vaccines are against this particular variant. So we're still waiting for final scientific data to be reviewed and the testing in the labs to finish so that they can tell us how effective it is. But we do know the booster is very important in this because our immunity does wane over time. So that booster is going to give us back that immunity up until the levels that we had after our primary doses. So that is the most important message I can give is please get those boosters as we define the spectrum of this particular variant, Omicron.
What would you say to people who are resistant to getting the booster, even though they already are vaccinated?
Well, you know, I try to always be very transparent and just give everybody the facts. And the facts are that the immunity from the original doses of our vaccines were excellent. I mean, these vaccines were so well developed for the short period of time. We're so fortunate, really. But we did, through our studies and longitudinally following those vaccines, know that that immunity does begin to drop off. So my words to those who are resistant or worried is, we want you to stay as vaccinated as possible, which means the immunity is enhanced. And we now know that we do need the boosters to accomplish that. So I try to lay it out on the table. This will help you stay safe. You may still get COVID-19, but it will be very mild. It may be asymptomatic, in fact, but it will protect you in a large percentage of people who have the vaccines. And hopefully that will make sense to people. And then, of course, you always answer questions and try to address whatever fears they may have of having another a booster dose.
Given that there are different brands of vaccines that one can get, is there any conclusive research or emerging research that shows that some are more effective than others? Or what are your thoughts on the various brands of vaccines that people can go and get? And then are there different brands of boosters?
Yes, let me go through that for you. Thank you for the question. So we know that after 6 months after your primary two doses are done for the Moderna and Pfizer, or 2 months after the initial Janssen, which is also known as the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you can get your booster. We now do what we call mix and match, which means whatever one's available to you during those time frames will help you. Now, when we're looking at the variant like Delta, we know the effectiveness has stayed very high in all of those vaccines. It's been, you know, very, very acceptable coverage. But we don't yet know with Omicron if that, what that coverage, you know, if you look at percentages, is it going to be 90%, 85%? We don't know that yet. So all of them are definitely can be used. Whatever's available to you where you get vaccinated, they can be mixed and matched. The only difference is in our 16 and 17-year-olds, only Pfizer's authorized for a booster for that age group, because as you recall, Pfizer's the only one that covered those ages since the beginning of the vaccines. Moderna has not achieved that approval yet to vaccinate younger ages at this time.
Okay. Any other misconceptions about the Johnson not being as effective as Pfizer or Moderna that you want to dispel?
Well, you know, Johnson & Johnson is a slightly different vaccine, and it still gave excellent coverage, but there are some things that it works better for. So you really have to look at all the studies. But if you really look at the fact that the vaccines are largely excellent coverage for COVID-19, all of them will help you. Johnson & Johnson is just basically a different vaccine. So it has proven to be, you know, strong in some areas and definitely still very good in other areas. We know Pfizer has been very successful, and they've done, you know, to their credit, good clinical studies that show first the adolescents would be covered well, and now that the 5 through 11, which we're very grateful for, is also safe at that reduced dose. And therefore, we can then extend it to other age groups. So I don't think, you know, there's certain nuances, but I think overall the big key message is vaccination with any of them is still extremely protective.
So, and a booster with any of them is also recommended, and you should get the booster that is in alignment with whichever vaccine brand you got initially, correct?
Well, you know, we prefer staying with the same vaccine, but you can mix and match them. But they're effective. If you had Pfizer and where you are has Moderna, that's absolutely fine. If you had Moderna and only Pfizer's available, that is absolutely fine. I know early on we did encourage staying with the same vaccine, but CDC and ACIP and all the committees came out with it is okay to mix and match. They will all work, and they all enhance your immunity, and that's the biggest key message.
Well, thank you, Dr. Christensen. This is very valuable information. I know I'm learning a lot, and I hope our audience is too. We're going to talk with you more after the break. This is Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London, and we'll be right back.
The Dene Reader and Anthology of Navajo Literature brings together many voices to speak about the life and culture of the Dene people. Nonfiction prose, poetry, and fiction offer a deeper understanding of Dene history and culture. Hear more on Native America Calling's December Book of the Month with me, Tara Gatewood.
Uju. Mazanayagan ayabaduk jinananda weaguyan de baige siwan, mino mashkiki yo o, tange guenenege nongam. Kanoje no kid nishinabe akuzi wagamigung no wajjige kendaman, mawadishiwain healthcare.gov, game aganoj 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
This is Native America Calling. Welcome back. We are having a show about COVID-19 updates and also learning about the booster shot. And on the line with us today, we have Dr. Christensen, and she was sharing with us about updates from the Indian Health Service perspective on all things you need to know about whether to get the booster, why it's okay to mix and match the vaccines. And also we're going to get into a conversation about why it's important to still be mindful about COVID-19 during your holiday break. Dr. Christensen, let's get into that question. What do you want people to know about the holidays?
Thanks so much for that, because this is so vitally important. We are so wanting to be with family and to celebrate, and we can. We just have to be safe in our approach. As you have experienced, along with all of us, that we've had these surges throughout the country. And I will say that I believe Indian Country had one less surge because of the proactiveness we had from our leaders that said, you know, we're going to keep our boundaries closed. We're going to make you wear masks. We're going to be very vigilant. And I think that really helped us a great deal. So we can't stop now. A lot of what we see around the country is what I call drift. We were so strict in the first couple of waves of COVID about not gathering, about not going to sporting events or things where there were a lot of people in close contact. And everybody's just kind of, it seems like, said, well, we're just going to go for it and we'll just deal with what happens. But this is why we're in this surge again that we're so concerned about, is because we stopped doing the things that worked. And in across Indian Country, I think we've been successful in holding our ground in that we keep our mask mandates on our tribal lands. We are in our federal buildings. We have asked our healthcare employees to get vaccinated, and they have stepped up very big. A lot of tribes have required mandatory vaccination. So when we gather, we want to be vaccinated. We want to still keep our distance. We only want to have people with us that we live with, that we know. And then we want to be very honest in our families and our friends to say, have you been exposed? Is there any risk you might have gotten exposed to COVID-19? And then we have to take the same measures again. We have distance. We may have to wear our masks in our own homes if somebody's been exposed. That person maybe will not be able to attend. And I know that's very sad, but we don't want these whole families to become positive. It's just really essential to not stop our public health measures, really wash our hands, really keep everything disinfected, kind of sit apart from each other, wear masks if necessary, and keep our gatherings in small numbers again this year, which I know is so hard for everyone because we love to be with those we care about. But we have to keep those things going to keep our population and our people safe.
Definitely do. But what about COVID-19 fatigue? I mean, this has been going on for several years now. What would you say to people who are just wanting to go back to quote-unquote normal life? Is that going to be possible going forward?
Eventually, yes. And you know, we got to look at the good side of things is that we've all worked so hard together to protect our friends, families, and communities. We don't want to stop now. We have been so wonderful across Indian Country. We care so much about our families and everyone that I think we've gone that extra distance to stay safe. And I'll just keep telling, but I know you're tired. Our healthcare workforce are so exceptional, and they're going to keep going, but we are all tired. So I just think that if you can just keep it going, remember you're not only protecting yourself, but you're protecting others, that gives us strength to keep going forward. And so, you know, a lot of the messaging that's coming out and really excellent public messaging from all out of our tribal organizations and urban sites is you gather safely. Here's some of the things you need to do. You know, this is, you know, good ventilation, all washing hands, all those things, and then we can come together. And if we keep remembering we're keeping everybody safe, I think we'll find the strength to continue on doing the right things.
I am glad to hear that there is good messaging that is going out to our tribal communities. Someone with us today who is from focusing on our tribal community's health from Window Rock, Arizona, is Dr. Jill Jim. She's Executive Director of the Navajo Nation Department of Health, and she's Diné. Welcome to Navajo Welcome to Navajo Calling. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Jim. It does feel like that sometimes. So many Navajos. Welcome to Native America Calling. What is the Navajo Nation doing with the current COVID-19 safety protocols, Dr. Jim?
Well, thank you for inviting me on the call, and I just want to just say hi to Dr. Christensen as well. And well, for the Navajo Nation, what we're experiencing right now is we're past our Thanksgiving spike, so we did have a small increase after Thanksgiving, and right now we are still operating at 50% for business occupancy. Most businesses are open. We have not gone back down to a lower percent. There are no curfews right now or either shelters in place. We do have a safer at home order, just reminding individuals to stay home as much as they can. And so those are the requirements that we still have. We do have a vaccine mandate for government, tribal government and chapter locations. And also we have an indoor and outdoor mask mandate that's still in existence since April 2020.
That is still a lot that people are in the Navajo Nation are having to keep in mind. I do want to, though, bring in a caller. We have Melvin calling in from Nebraska and listening in on KZYK. Melvin?
Yeah, good morning. In about an hour and a half, I'm going to my clinic. Hopefully, I'm going to get a booster. I've been trying for about a month. A lot of it is scheduling because of I go to dialysis 3 times a week, and it just fit me in to get that booster. But I would like to know if the doctors can tell me, when should I expect to get this booster? Is my arm going to be sore? Am I going to get a little sick? Or what has been the effects of the shot? What should I expect?
Thank you, Melvin. Dr. Christensen, do you want to answer Melvin's question? What about what he should expect?
Yes, thank you, sir, for that question. You will see the same, if any, side effects as you did with the first two shots, in that it's usually just some local soreness of the arm. You may feel tired for a day or so, and you may feel a very slight, maybe slight fever. It will not be any more than the first two, you know, either of the first two doses, so it should you should not get anything worse than that you might have experienced before. But we're just getting reports of that, a little bit of redness, a little bit of soreness in the arm, a little bit of fatigue. And most people are saying it's lasting less than 24 hours for the most part.
Okay, that's good to know. We also have a caller from Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. Glenn, you have a question?
Yeah, it's about the mix and match with the Janssen vaccine. So as recommended, I got the booster shot, which was a Pfizer, and soon it'll be 6 months after that booster. Do I get a second booster of a Pfizer or Moderna after the first booster, after the J&J?
Dr. Christensen?
Yes. Hi. Again, thank you so much. That is a great question, and there is no answer yet. They have not looked out further than 6 months past the booster to see how long it holds, if you will, how long the immunity holds. It is being studied, and we will certainly get advice, I hope, by the beginning of the year, whether we think we're going to have to do another round of boosters. If you got a third dose because you are high risk, immunocompromised, or on immunosuppressive drugs, there will be a fourth dose for those patients who got the third dose due to their medical condition. And that would be 6 months after that third dose. So just let me recap. If you got two shots and a booster, you're good for now, until more guidelines come out. If you got a third shot because you're high-risk medical, you have, you know, something immunocompromising like cancer or autoimmune diseases, or if you're on chemo, steroid therapy, things like that, you will need the fourth dose 6 months after your last dose.
Okay. That is very helpful. Thank you, Dr. Christensen. Did that help, Glenn? If you're still there?
Yes. Thank you very much. Yes.
Awesome. Great. It's a great show. Good information. I'm learning a lot. I'm glad our audience is finding value in it, too. Dr. Jim, what is taking place in the Navajo Nation when it comes to the booster shot?
Well, right now we are coordinating efforts. We usually issue out health advisories. We did issue out one, just letting everyone know before, I think at the same time that CDC had decided to open up to everyone for the 18 and older to get booster shots. While states have their own jurisdiction and they were also making decisions to expand their population, we also did at the same time that that was approved. So I do believe in the tribal ability and our sovereignty to make those decisions, and we are supporting the 15 and older to get their booster shot with the Pfizer one as well. And we are focusing in on the vaccine. We have certainly increased our vaccine data collection right now. We're monitoring that, and we have about 60% of our total population vaccinated. For those that are 12 and older, 72%. And we're also tracking the ones that the age 5 to 7 right now. And we're working with the facilities across the Navajo Nation, and some things that we're doing every weekend. This would be the third weekend. Our Office of the President and Vice President, President Nez, works with the health facilities on these vaccine drives, and we give out turkey and hams. And for people that have gotten a vaccine before, they're more than welcome to come and pick up a turkey or a ham. And then we also are going to be distributing some PPE as well at these events. And there's one on Sunday in Shiprock, so hopefully we'll be out there giving out extra items to protect people from COVID. So, and there's a lot of messaging that will be going on, just encouraging individuals to get vaccinated. We do have a forum this evening, and we have forums on the radio. Just to let people know, we do have speakers, Navajo speakers, that are still fluid, and we try to do messaging through social media and through the routes that we all are familiar with in the country is radio. So that's where we're at, but thank you for that question.
Thank you. That's wonderful to hear that there's a community building aspect to the vaccine rollout, and that's, I'm sure, very appreciated by families when they're getting to enjoy a ham or a turkey that they receive at one of your clinics. Are there any concerns you have for the COVID-19 spread for these winter months throughout the Navajo Nation? Dr. Jim?
Yeah, I do. Thank you for that question, Alyssa. I do have a great concern, and I think we were in the same situation a year ago, and we're just bracing for it that there isn't going to be a surge. But I think it's sort of expected. The more people socialize and gather, and there is mitigation and strategies that are in place, and as much as we say do not gather, which is the recommended effort in order to stop any sort of transmission, we know that people are still going to gather. I know we have a gathering limit of 20 people on the Navajo Nation, so we try to, or 15 or less people, sorry, to gather and making sure that they're either get tested before they attend event, and I think that sort of has been a national recommendation. Knowing where people are at, if you're coming back as a college student for 2 or 3 weeks during your break, just to be mindful, and then also to make sure that people that are sick that stay home. And so I think we're encouraging individuals to be a little bit proactive and also inviting people that are only vaccinated too. And so I think these are sort of ideas that families are considering, not only on the Navajo Nation, but across the United States, and making sure you have your vaccine card updated or you have your booster shot. And so the more safe it is, the better that we're at and trying to reduce transmission. And I am a little bit worried because our healthcare system has been strained, not only here on the Navajo Nation, but everywhere. Just last week, I think our ICU beds were at 100% capacity, and then we were also little bit. This week we've improved, and that's why I said we're over the spike. We're also testing less, our positivity, our test positivity rate is lower this week than last week, from 16, now at 12%, and our hospital capacity is back down to 88% for ICU beds. So there is a large impact. The more people get sick and need to be hospitalized, the beds are going to get full. And so I'm a little bit concerned. We are receiving federal assistance and ventilators that we're still requesting right now so that we can help facilities expand beds. And also we have staffing that are vaccinators as well as also respiratory therapists or nurses that are coming on board to help the facilities. So right now there is medical staffing from external sources that are going into our federal and tribal facilities just to maintain the operation. And it's not only all related to COVID cases, but non-COVID patients as well. So I believe this is a national trend where we're seeing both of those. And there is a concern. And I think I just hope that we all practice these precautions to not overwhelm our healthcare system.
And Dr. Jim, has that spike been a result of any of the variants specifically, or is it just generically an ongoing issue of the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, on Navajo, we do have a sequencing project here that we work with all the health facilities. And to date, I think we have about 951 Delta variants. Out of the little bit over 1,200 test samples that have been sequenced. So majority of the cases that we have are Delta. There's no Omicron detected on the Navajo Nation, but there has been one identified in the three states that we reside in, which is New Mexico, Utah, Arizona, and Colorado.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Jim, and also thank you, Dr. Christensen. We're going to have to go to a break right now, but we'll continue talking with both of you when we're back. Also, a reminder for our audience, you can call in at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. This is a great show for you to ask all your questions that pertain to the booster shot and COVID-19. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
Program support is by Montana State University in Bozeman, home to MSU's Native American Studies Department and over 750 Native students from 35 states. MSU is proud to announce the October 16th grand opening of its new American Indian Hall, a project over 15 years in the making. American Indian Hall, a crossroads of culture and student support. Montana.edu/AIH.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Alyssa London. We're focusing on health updates about COVID-19, variants, vaccinations, and the holidays. How are your Native community leaders using their influence and tribal resources to keep the whole community safe this winter? There's still time to join this important conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, on the call with me today, I have Dr. Loretta Christensen, Chief Medical Officer for the Indian Health Service, and Dr. Jill Jim, Executive Director of the Navajo Nation Department of Health. Now, Dr. Christensen, before the break, Dr. Jim was talking about the spike in COVID-19 cases and how the hospitals and emergency rooms are being inundated and don't have any more capacity. What is the Indian Health Service doing to help offset this strain on Native American health systems on the Navajo Nation and also across the country?
Yes, that is absolutely correct. And it is straining our federal sites as well. Dr. Jim made a great point. I do want to point out that over 99% of cases across the country, and this is very true in Indian country as well, are unvaccinated people. And so that brings us back to our main message, I think, today of how important vaccination is, certainly for one's health, but even for our health system. It is really straining us to have all these inpatients, both on the floors and in the ICUs, and you look across and it's 98, 99% all unvaccinated, which means could possibly have been preventable. And so that's why we work so hard to get our vaccinations out, because we know the downstream effect is that we're going to strain all of our resources. Our nurses are tired. Our doctors are tired. Our staffs are just, they've done an exceptional job, but they are so fatigued. And if we don't continue to push vaccination, we're going to continue to have full hospitals. As the headquarters of Indian Health Service, we are meeting with our leadership twice a week, and we do go over who is in the hotspot, how many beds, what's the occupancy, and as we can assist, we try to create ways for them to transfer patients through agreements. We've been in really great partnership with the VA, who have been taking some of our patients, and we're very grateful. We work with the surge lines, for example, in Arizona and New Mexico to try to place our patients. But I have to tell you, across the country, we're really stressed by this. We are working very hard to get people to where they need to be so they can get appropriate care. Resources are limited, and I mean the whole United States has this issue. We've had crisis standards in Alaska, in New Mexico, maybe soon for Arizona, for Idaho, for up in Montana and Washington areas, because there's just no more room. So we try to enhance our staffing across the agency. We have a critical care response team that is still very, very busy that we send to places that request, and they try to support the staff there and teach and educate how to take care of more critical patients. Because quite frankly, sometimes we can't get them transferred, and we take care of them. And we do a good job, and we're going to do our very best to help every single person. But we add this extra team in there to get out there and support these sites. So we're going to continue providing all of that support as best as we can. But I do just really plead again with people to really consider vaccination so they don't end up in the hospital and our systems can recover from what's been a constant rolling assault on our resources.
Thank you for all of this insight, Dr. Christensen. Are there any regions within the Indian Health Service that are better or worse than others, and what is making the difference one way or the other?
Well, I honestly think that the efforts across Indian country for vaccinations have been profound. We were early. We got a lot of people vaccinated as soon as the vaccines came out. And I think that's why we managed the Delta surges so well, is because we were already in our vaccination. So as we continue to lead the country for certainly minority groups across the country, we are way ahead. It's because we've been very aggressive with our vaccinations. And you have to thank the people, first of all, for stepping up, for caring and getting in line and getting their vaccines. And then secondly, for all the efforts across the urban, tribal, and federal sites for our personnel to be out there sometimes 7 days a week giving these vaccinations. I think that has helped us, Alyssa, a great deal, and that has helped us maintain our heads above water, although it's close sometimes. So we just continue to encourage that, keep healthy, follow the public health measures, get vaccinated, and you should not be the ones that end up in the hospital. We are managing our facilities, and to answer your question, we've had waves throughout the agency and Indian country where different areas have been hot at different times. So it is change. It changes with the states that surround us, as Dr. Jim said. So we are kind of, this is kind of impacts us from the surrounding states, how high their cases are as well. Because our people go to work, to go to school, and they leave the reservations to go into these areas for work and such. And therefore, they may get exposed there and bring it back to the reservation. So we are all in this together across the country. So we have to stay in this together and encourage everybody that works in or near our communities to be vaccinated. And Indian Health Service has been very, very out there with our vaccines to include anyone in our communities. We want everyone to be vaccinated.
Thank you, Dr. Christensen. Great insights. And Dr. Jim, given that Dr. Christensen, you know, keeps making the point that unvaccinated patients are the driver of these spikes in hospitalizations and just the overwhelming nature of and the drain on our hospital systems and our resources. So how do we get the message out? Give us some examples how the Navajo Nation is doing it.
Well, And Dr. Christensen pointed to that is a lot of things we translate in Navajo to our people and our relatives is really to just be mindful of yourself and others around you and especially healthcare providers. And I think that's sort of the way we teach cultural values and teachings on Navajo. And Navajo we call like eh, and it's part of the way of framing to be respectful and mindful not only of our elders or and others, and I think that's how we try to message that out and to be considerate. And another thing that we try to incorporate is just that we let them and know that we're reinforcing them to take on that individual responsibility too. That we have been in this pandemic for a very long time. That we have all the tools that we have in order to try to prevent getting COVID, and that basically means masking up, physical distancing, getting vaccinated, and some of the new things for the messaging that's going to roll out or that has been rolling out is getting tested. And there is home and self-test kits that we're giving out to make sure that people get tested, but then also get treatment if you test positive and go to your nearest health facility, because treatment will also save lives, but there's an eligibility criteria and also a time frame for that. So if there's time, I would like Dr. Christensen to share and talk about the treatment availability too, because that's very important, and testing and testing availability in Indian Health Service. And the state of Arizona has helped on the Navajo Nation get testing kits out available, and we're planning to use that for the holidays, and we're just giving them out to families that are close contacts. They're working with contact tracers and case managers. So those are ways, and I think that's just reinforcing that sort of positive messaging and motivating individuals that they can do this and they have this in their toolkit, and hopefully they use it. So empowering individuals that they can reinforce and do this to prevent any spike in cases.
So, Dr. Jim, can you ask Dr. Christensen the question you would like her to answer?
Dr. Christensen. So the antibody monoclonal treatment, and I think maybe some of the callers might know some of this or may not, but I just wanted you to describe when that's important and if they're all provided across Indian country at these facilities so people understand that there are treatment options across Indian country. Thanks.
Go ahead, Dr. Christensen.
Thank you, Dr. Jim. Thank you so much for bringing these things up. I'm very happy to speak about them. So monoclonal antibody therapy throughout Indian country, we have over 120 sites that are receiving supplies to be able to give that treatment. It is a treatment that should happen in the first 5 days of symptoms. So please, everyone, don't hesitate with symptoms. You know, put on your mask, go get tested, or if you have access to the home testing, as Dr. Jim said, take the test. And if you're positive, let's get you treated. And I know, just for example, in Navajo, the exceptional contact tracing team is actually doing a pilot to get them both tested and into the antibody treatment right away, which is great, because we want to encourage, once you get symptoms, if we can head off the illness, especially in our high-risk patients, we want to do that immediately. We do have all of them available from our national supply center that can be distributed across Indian country. There are several of them. They all work, and we are able to distribute all of those monoclonal antibodies. We also encourage sites to make sure there are monoclonal infusion sites
that within their areas so that people will have access to them. We've worked with the state. For example, the Oklahoma area works with Oklahoma to set up these sites, and we support all of our population having access to that in the Oklahoma area. Arizona's been helpful. The state of New Mexico and some of the other states have set up centers where we can refer our patients to. Many of the times it's our own tribal sites and federal sites that are doing these treatments. And the good news is that some of them can be used by just a shot. You don't have to have the IV and monitoring infusion the way it first started when we started using this treatment. We now have the ability to give a shot. So that is going to mean that we can get to more people, and smaller clinics are going to be able to also provide these therapies. I also want to mention, in addition, especially our elders and high-risk patients, if we think they're even exposed, these monoclonal antibodies can be used as a prophylactic, as a protection against them getting COVID. So that is another function of that therapy, as we can actually use it as a prophylactic COVID-19. And then I do want to mention there is a new medication that's been approved called Evusheld. And this is for, again, our immunocompromised or those on immunosuppressive therapy, and it will give antibody protection for 6 months.
Wow.
So this will be a benefit to that population who are most vulnerable, and also can be used if people have had severe reactions to any of the COVID-19 vaccines. They can get the Evusheld, and it is that pill will last. That treatment will last 6 months at a time.
Thank you. I didn't know about a lot of these therapies and treatments. I'm glad to know that these are all coming to market and development. Our show has been, a lot about why vaccination and boosters are good and important to roll out in our communities. But you don't have to go far to see or find messaging that discourages vaccination and public safety measures. So why is this still happening, and how do you answer that? Dr. Jim, you want to start off with this? And we're also nearing the end of our show, so there's that.
Yeah, thank you, Alyssa. And basically, with a lot of the social media and town halls that we do, we try to have healthcare providers like Dr. Christensen at the time provide the messaging and also reinforce to get inform people to rely on credible sources for their information. So that's sort of the message. And I know that the U.S. Surgeon General did a whole misinformation campaign as well, and we're trying to incorporate that as well. And just letting people know, get your information from reliable sources. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Christensen, any thoughts on travel for the holiday season as we close out our show?
Oh, thanks so much for asking, because I did want to get that in. Please do not consider traveling unless you're vaccinated. Check the situations where you're traveling to see if there's restrictions. Keep your mask on. If you must travel, keep your mask on in an airplane or buses or trains. Please don't travel if you're exposed to COVID-19 or if you're sick or have tested positive. And if you must absolutely travel, test before and after you travel. Those are the safest guidelines we have right now, but if you can avoid it, that, of course, is the best decision until it is safer to fly or travel for everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. And Dr. Christensen, where can people keep up with the trends from the Indian Health Service, hospitalizations, and also the latest about COVID-19 and its variants?
Well, if you go to ihs.gov and go to our COVID website, we have all of our information. We have tools there, and we also have, if somebody really wants to read the pharmaceutical report, we have a webpage for all of the parameters for all the medications and treatments that are used as well.
Thank you. We have reached the end of the hour, and I would like to say thank you, Ganeshish, to our guest Dr. Jill Jim and Dr. Loretta Christensen. Join us tomorrow for our Book of the Month feature. This time, we'll take a look at the Dene Reader, an anthology of Navajo literature. For now, I'm Alyssa London, and this has been an episode of Native America Calling.
With Christmas supplies and gifts in short supply, rest assured Prairie Edge and the Sioux Trading Post have you covered. Botanicals, craft supplies, beads, books, and music. We may not have it all, but we sure have a bunch at PrairieEdge.com who support this show. Wopila.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.